This is the University Spotlight on Beyond the Headlines. I'm KUNR General Manager David Stipik. Today's focus is earthquakes. Naturally, most of us only feel and remember the large earthquakes, like the jolts that rattled through South Reno a few days before Christmas this past year, or the 2008 swarm that went on for months that felt like years in West Reno. And there are less noticeable earthquakes occurring all the time as well. Not only is Northern Nevada earthquake country, it's also the epicenter of worldwide earthquake research that's happening every day right here at the University of Nevada, Reno. University of Nevada, Reno Provost Kevin Carman joins me now in the studio, along with Dr. Graham Kent, Director of the Nevada Seismological Laboratory and one of the university's foremost researchers. Gentlemen, welcome.
Good afternoon, David.
Thank you very much.
Well, we look forward to another interesting conversation here today. And Kevin, let me ask you to start us off by giving a little sense of this topic and your guest today.
Well, as you indicated, Graham is a director of the, we affectionately refer to it, the Seismo Lab here at UNR. It's one of our state-funded programs that really serves the entire state of Nevada, not just the University of Nevada, Reno. He's got a lot of projects that are going on that not only are impacting the state of Nevada, but really the region and the nation. He's a nationally recognized expert, has served on panels at the White House and really a leader in his field. He's a geologist and a professor at the university. He's also involved in a variety of student programs and interacting with our students. So he's just another great example of the faculty we have that contribute to the university and the state in so many ways.
And Dr. Kent, as Provost Carman has just been talking about all your illustrious career and expertise, you've obviously been doing this for some time. What got you interested, Graham, in this field?
You know, it was interesting. I was going to grow up and be an astronomer, maybe try to be an astronaut. And then I started rock climbing, and the whole thing went downhill at that point. So getting out there in the Sierra and trying to understand what was I looking at. And I had already started in college in calculus and physics, and seemed like I should go into geophysics at that point. So that's really how that that path started in earnest.
Isn't it true, though, that you were a finalist for to be an astronaut at some point? You actually went that far with it?
Yeah, so I got to do that right stuff thing and go through all the medical tests. And at some point, they decided they didn't like my left eye. But it was a fun week plus. Got to see a live launch. Talked to John Young about walking on the moon and seismology and unfortunately, knew three of the Columbia astronauts, too, so that was that was a bit hard. So, but still, it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Well, Graham, this interview airs as the month of April is wrapping up. It's been a very busy month for you and your colleagues here on campus, hosting more than 800 earthquake experts from around the world to talk about earthquakes and preparedness and the economic effects. And there have been other events on campus as well. Just give us a sense of what's been going on this month.
Yeah, so the Seismological Society of America had their annual meeting here in Reno, and it's about 800 folks from around the world, and they came here in part because, well, one, we have earthquakes, and two, good. It's a beautiful place, easy to fly in and out. Also, we run one of the regional seismic networks, so that adds some value to coming here and kind of seeing what we're doing and how we're spinning off other technology sets, such as the fire watching capabilities. But for us, for the community, we felt this is a great opportunity to essentially start to talk about economic resiliency. Because through our drop, cover, and hold on great shakeout drill, that's the first thing we want to do is keep people alive and reduce the injuries. But then what about a week later or a month later? Is your economy's in tatters because we didn't do a few things on the front end? And since everybody's flown into Reno, there's a great opportunity to bring folks who have experiences with the Canterbury sequence in New Zealand or in Italy or even just Napa locally and try to learn what did they do right, what did they do wrong, what are other regions, other cities, other countries doing to game the system. We all live in Nevada, right? So we want to figure out how to game the system to our advantage by spending a little money up front and make a lot of money on the backside so that an event doesn't cause the economy to come unhinged. But we don't want people to think like, wow, so I've gotten out from underneath my desk and now I can go to work the next day because your kid might not be able to go to school because the school's closed, right? Or if there's rubble, where are you going to move the rubble to? It sounds like kind of a ridiculous thing, but if you're figuring that out afterwards, you're in trouble. And so our motto is hope is not a plan.
We have at UNR a world-class earthquake engineering facility. Is that relevant to the people who attended this conference?
When you think about resiliency, you think about, well, how do we make our structures better? How do we make a bay bridge that doesn't drop a section, right? Because that's not just the people whose lives may be endangered, but that's the economy. When you can't drive from Oakland to San Francisco, your economy isn't happy. And so that's one of the things, actually, and again, we have a world-class structures lab here. As a community, we kind of almost understand that. Like, if we're going to build a new building or a bridge or a span, we can kind of work that out. It's those small things that people are starting to realize are actually big things. And so that's somewhat what the conference is about. So in Salt Lake City, for example, if you re-roof your house, they'll give you $5,000 to attach your roof to your walls. And you think, wow, I would think that the roof is attached to walls. But for a lot of old structures, that's not the case. So that's just one way of spending a little bit of money to try to essentially make that next earthquake less damaging.
And I know that one of the emphases of the structures lab now is to not only look at the integrity of the structure, but the functionality of the structure so that after the earthquake that you actually still have water flowing through pipes and you don't have ruptured gas lines.
Absolutely. Now, what we learned from Napa, which a community that had a magnitude 5 earthquake 14 years before, and always mention that we've had a magnitude 5 earthquake about 8 years before, but they really took that to task and did a lot of retrofits, a lot of planning. But what we learned on the bad side about Napa is a lot of damage came from a couple sprinkler heads that broke off. And they broke off in county buildings that had to be evacuated for over 6 months, and all the records were soaked. So it is the biggest advertisement to put your IT infrastructure on the cloud, because if it were on the cloud, even if your building had to be evacuated, you could go down to Berkeley, log on, and still run your city of Napa.
This is Beyond the Headlines on KUNR. I'm David Stipik, and the University Spotlight today is with University Provost Kevin Carman and the Director of the University Seismology Lab, Dr. Graham Kent. We're talking about earthquakes, and Kevin, back to you.
What does early warning mean with current technology? What are our capabilities, and what's the best case that we might be able to predict earthquakes accurately?
So right now, the community is building out a earthquake early warning network prototype, and it's on the West Coast, but really it's on the kind of fringes of the West Coast near all the large cities, Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, for example. And really, it's a simple concept when you think about it. If you place enough seismometers in the ground, and you have an earthquake take off and it starts hitting each individual instrument, well, we can start to locate that earthquake more quickly if there's more instruments, and we bring that data back via the microwave system, for example. And lo and behold, maybe 5 seconds into the rupture, 10 seconds into the rupture, we now have a location. Now, if the rupture just stopped, then that's not a very good warning system. But for largest earthquakes, the magnitude 6.5, 7s, 8s, that may give you upwards of a minute of warning. And so maybe the folks right next to the epicenter, well, they didn't gain very much or anything. But if you're in the Los Angeles basin and you have 45 seconds and you know it's coming towards you, a very tangible example is in the Bay Area, they will slow down BART trains. Why is that important? You don't want to be in a BART train going 80 when it skids off the path. Think of this one idea. If you look at the number of fatalities and the type of injuries from that Philadelphia derailment about a year ago, and you apply to all the BART trains going at their full clip, those ones that are, there are not enough hospital beds in Northern California to take everybody in from that one example. So if the only thing you ever did was built a system from BART, you would gain major advantages. In the future, you're going to be able to essentially turn off gas valves, lift up, for example, garage doors for fire trucks so you don't have to cut them out like Northridge. It's going to be a long process. It's going to take a decade or more to get all this worked out, but you have to start somewhere. And so hopefully soon we'll start building out the Eastern California network, and then hopefully after that in Western Nevada. And that's important for our own economic vibrance, because advanced manufacturing, for example, people are thinking about doing that in our area. It's not a big surprise after Tesla and Apple and Switch. But if you're going to do that, for example, if you're going to build integrated circuit chips, you need to be able to know that seismic wave is coming or your $250 million machine gets wrecked. So, again, by having that capability here, it's not only going to hopefully save lives and reduce injuries, but actually is going to be an attractor for businesses to have that capability here.
I want to turn the topic a little bit to one of the areas that people might not connect right off the bat is the interest in firefighting in the 21st century. And you have a personal interest. I know you've had some homes either lost or threatened by fires over the course of your life. Talk a little bit about that. And then how does this seeming unrelated topic of earthquakes come to firefighting?
Well, in 2003, San Diego was hit by the Cedar Fire, which still is the largest urban interfacing fire in the history of the country. And what was interesting about that is my house was in the way. And it didn't burn down, but everything around my house burned down. So when you get back and you realize, well, that was lucky. Again, luck isn't a plan either. So the seismic network at the time down in San Diego County had cameras out on it. And you could see that had that information been more easily available, that may have saved some of the lives lost in Harbison Canyon and just helping to fight the fire. It was used a little bit by CAL FIRE at the time. But so we started putting cameras out on the network, and this was led by Frank Vernon at UC San Diego. And 4 years later, we had the Witch Fire, and people were using these cameras to essentially for evacuation purposes and how to fight the fire. So one of the interesting things that seismologists know how to do is bring back data quickly, on time, all the time. And instead of bringing back seismic data on these microwave networks, we can bring back imagery from cameras. And so when I came to UNR in 2009, one of the things we wanted to do was take the next step. And instead of just monitoring the fires, let's develop a system that goes out and finds them when they're young and small and very easy to put out. And so for the last 3 years, our biggest effort has been to develop a system that's not only good for monitoring, but to put them out and put them out early. We've had a lot of success this last summer.
Graham, I'd like you to comment, if you would. We had Jim Falls on a few weeks ago, great guy, and he runs the Nevada Bureau of Mines and Geology, as you know, and he's on the campus here. You're on the campus here. Could you describe briefly how the Seismology Lab and the Nevada Bureau of Mines and Geology are together a great resource for the state of Nevada?
Yeah, we work very closely with the Bureau of Mines and Geology. If you want to make it simple, it's not really absolutely true, but we spend most of our time doing more of the monitoring things. They might be making more of the maps. Having said that, we make maps at the Seismo Lab, and they do some monitoring with the geodetics. But again, we both have our strong suit, and so the more that we work together, that really makes us a better team and a better team for the state. But just as an example, when we have our large earthquake that we're talking about, it's the Seismo Lab that's ultimately going to say, oh my God, it's a 6.4 and it's 10 miles from Hawthorne, it's 7 kilometers deep. That information is immediately going to go over to the Bureau, and they're going to look at basically the fragility of the buildings in that region through this program called HAZES. And their responsibility is to then to take that information, which is map-based, and then to produce a loss estimate. And it might be loss of lives, injuries, how many people need hospitalization, water conveyance. It's just an estimate. And then we both together, in some sense, although it's going to be via email, I'm sure, but we would walk it over to the governor, and what says you, you know? And so that's one example of how we work together.
We are a university, and we've got graduate and undergraduate students on this campus. And are there opportunities for students to be involved in your programs?
Absolutely. And if you look at the combination of the Seismo Lab and the Bureau, when it comes to seismotectonics, we were ranked number 9 in the country. And that's not just universities. That includes all entities. And so for graduate students coming here and wanting to study seismology and tectonics, we're one of the top programs in the country. And so we teach classes, we have graduate students, and so we're very much involved in the education mission here. And in both statewide programs, we also do service classes. I teach a Geology 100 about every other year because I have passionate about it, and talk about climate change and earthquakes and whatnot. And so we belong on a campus like UNR because we do fundamentally change how our students can learn and work. And I'd say in the Seismo Lab, we hire somewhere between 20 and 30 undergraduates per year and pay them money. It might be for a two-week-long field project, or they might be picking earthquakes for a year. So we're very much involved in student research, and I know the Bureau is as well.
And again, congratulations on a very busy April. You've had a lot going on, and we appreciate you taking time for the interview today. This has been the University Spotlight on KUNR, talking about earthquakes with Dr. Graham Kent, Director of the Nevada Seismological Laboratory, and University of Nevada, Reno Provost Kevin Carman. Thanks to you both for the visit today, Kevin and Graham.
Thank you, David.
Thanks a lot.
And I'm KUNR General Manager David Stipik. You're listening to Beyond the Headlines.